Hi everyone, before we go into the podcast, I just wanted to say thank you so much for listening to this podcast. I'm super grateful for your continued loyalty and support. If you could do me a quick favour, if you could give me a review on Apple Podcasts, it really helps the algorithm and it will help this podcast go up the lists. If there are any subjects or topics that you want me to cover, then please do reach out to me on DM on LinkedIn and I will do my best to find the best guest for that subject or topic. This is the Absolute Business Mindset Podcast, created and hosted by Mark Hayward. This podcast will interview entrepreneurs, business owners, and people in their careers. We will delve into their journey to success, key life milestones, and go deep into their area of expertise. Get ready to learn from others' successes and failures. Today we have Stacey Brown Randall, who shows business owners how to generate referrals without asking. Hello, Stacey. How are you?
I am doing great, Mark. Thanks so much for having me.
It's my absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me this afternoon. So we're going to go straight into it and talk about your education. So you did a degree in mass communication and broadcast journalism. So why don't you just tell me a little bit about your course and why you chose it?
Well, when I was growing up, I wanted to be the next Katie Couric. When she was the host of the Today Show, I figured at some point somebody was going to have to replace her. It might as well be me. So I loved being in front of the camera. I loved being I did a lot of theater and acting growing up as a child. I kind of just saw broadcast journalism as an extension of that. I wasn't the best actress by any shake of the imagination, but I just loved being on camera. I loved performing. And so I thought broadcast journalism was a great way to segue into that. When I was in high school, I was the host of a teen show that went live every Saturday morning. So really? I kind of had that experience. Yeah, I had that experience of like, you know, hosting a teen show. It would live. There was three hosts of the show. It would go live every Saturday. Or actually, it would be recorded. Then it would go live every Saturday morning. And I loved it. And so in the States, and particularly in the Southeast of the United States, there were two really well-known broadcast journalism departments. And one was at the University of South Carolina and one was at the University of Georgia. And so I picked the University of South Carolina, headed off thinking I was going to be the next Katie Couric, and then got to my senior year and was like, I don't really know if I want to do this anymore. So I went in a different path after graduation. My parents were like, what are you doing? You have job offers to do the weekend weather and weekday reporter at stations. Wow. And I was like, yeah, no, I think I'm just going to go do something different.
So what did you do afterwards?
Well, it was a little bit more of a, I don't have a plan, which was very unusual for me. And it was, I remember my friends being like, wait a minute, you don't know what you're doing after graduation? Like, you've known what you're doing every year for the last 4 years of school. Like, how can you not know? Mm. And I was like, well, I'm going to get a job. And I decided to get a job. I was like, okay, I'm from Greenville, South Carolina, originally. University of South Carolina is in Columbia, South Carolina. So I was like, I am leaving the state. Like, I'm leaving South Carolina. And it was the two larger cities around us was Atlanta and Charlotte. And I was like, okay, I'll just start looking for jobs. And so I had done work within the nonprofit sector. So I knew I could probably get a fundraising job in the nonprofit sector. And I just happened to pick the job in Charlotte that I thought had more career progression for me. And I actually started working for a lobbying firm. So completely different than what I had done before.
That's very different from a broadcasting experience.
It was. But, you know, I think the number one thing that my broadcast journalism degree gave me was the ability to communicate. Mm-hmm. It was the ability to write. It was the ability to think on my feet. It was the ability to be able to persuade people, to be comfortable standing in front of folks and speaking. I mean, math is definitely not my strong suit. It's everything else on the communication side. And that really served me well as I would go forward into my career when I first graduated from college. And so it was just, you know, I got a job at a lobbying firm because it was a lobbying firm that protected the hospitality industry. And I come from a family of restaurant owners and hospitality folks. And so it was a natural fit. It was in the nonprofit sector. I mean, it was political, which I actually could not have cared about at all, but it was in the nonprofit sector and it was in the hospitality industry, an industry that was, of course, a part of my whole life growing up. My grandmother owned restaurants. My uncle owned a restaurant. My brother owned a restaurant. Eventually, I would get married to a man who would open a restaurant. My husband owned a restaurant at one point. So, but early in my, before I met him, like earlier, I was surrounded by entrepreneurs. And so, but all in the hospitality industry. So it was a natural first job fit for me. And it got me out of the state. It got me to Charlotte, which was a much larger city. And it just gave me a lot of different experiences and kind of growing my network here in Charlotte.
Okay. So is that working for the Charlotte magazine? Was that the role?
So I was at the lobbying firm, and then I got recruited to the Chamber of Commerce, and then I got recruited to go work at Charlotte Magazine. And then I got recruited back to the Chamber of Commerce. I used to refer to myself as just kind of like the hole plugger. Like wherever there's a hole and you need something, I can figure it out. If this was like back in the early 2000s when I was working at the Chamber of Commerce the first time, or it could have been the second time. And they were like, hey, like banner ads are becoming a thing. And we need to figure out how to sell banner ads on our website. And they're like, Stacey can figure it out. So I like went through some training, and then I started actually selling banner ads on the Charlotte Chamber of Commerce website. So I kind of had this portfolio career of a lot of different things that I did. And I usually just went, I mean, to be honest, I didn't have a huge, like, I want to get to this place by this age. It was more about, oh, you want me? Like, oh, you're recruiting me. You think I can do this? Does that interest me? Okay, sure. And then I would go and I would do it. And then over time, I started to figure out what I ultimately wanted. But I always knew going throughout my 20s, as I was being recruited to these different positions every couple of years, that eventually I would own my own business. I mean, coming from a family of entrepreneurs, that was always the ultimate dream. I just didn't know in my 20s what in the world I would own a business in. Like, what would I be selling to people? What would I be teaching? What would I be good at that I could then get someone to pay me for? So for me, it was this portfolio career of these stops along the way, kind of just meandering through and figuring out, yes, this seems like the next right step for me. I think I'll enjoy that. And so that's really how my early years after I graduated kind of progressed themselves.
So the Chamber of Commerce, so we have similar things in the UK, and it's incredibly important for local businesses to really sell, network, develop relationships, producers, whatever you know, the type of business. It sounds a bit of a naive question, but is it a major thing in the US as well? And does it support the local community well?
You know, I would say the chamber of my 20s, which was a couple decades ago, but the chamber of my 20s was definitely that. It was definitely, and it's a huge thing in the States as well. They are typically local. They do have like a national organization, but they don't all, it's not like they pay dues to the national or the US Chamber of Commerce, but there is that. And then most local cities and municipalities will start their own. And so Charlotte obviously has had one for a really long time. The one in Charlotte has changed. It's completely modified itself. It used to be there to support small businesses, and then the large corporations really funneled dollars into it to be able to be a place to support small businesses. The Charlotte one has shifted and changed dramatically. The focus is not on small businesses anymore at all, but it used to be. And so it was a great place to go as somebody who was newer in a city and was looking to grow my network and looking to meet people and trying to figure out where I wanted to go next.
We'll be back after a quick break. If you want tips and strategies on how to start, grow, and monetize your business online, check out the Digital Revolution podcast with Eli Adams. We interview digital experts from around the world that share their personal stories. They talk about what they're currently working on and where they see the future going. But most importantly, they share tactics in their specific area of expertise with the hope of helping you improve your digital presence online. You can listen to the Digital Revolution podcast on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, iHeartRadio, or simply click on the link in the show notes below.
And you say that you're a proud Charlotte resident.
Yes.
I saw that all over the website that you are a proud Charlotte. So what does that mean? Does that mean that you based all of your career in Charlotte, I take it? And so what does it mean? What does Charlotte mean to you?
Yeah, you know, it's just home. I mean, Greenville obviously is where I grew up, right? South Carolina is my home state, and North Carolina is my adopted state. I didn't go very far, to be honest. And it's funny, my husband's from New York. And so it's really interesting. And he and I talk about, like, he moved, like, after college, he did the big move down and like moved with his buddies and started in a new city. And I told him one time we were talking, I was like, I can't believe I'm going to live my entire adult life in Charlotte. But once we got married and had kids and put down roots, now it's like, I don't know if I just want to pick them up and move them. But my parents did that to us. My brother and I, my parents picked up when I was 7 and moved us from South Carolina to Colorado. And so it was this amazing experience. I have such fond memories of that. But our children are just going to grow up in Charlotte. And, you know, it's where we're based. It's where we are. It's where my husband and I met. And of course, it's where we're growing and raising our family. And so from that perspective, it's home. It's definitely been home. It's a great city. I mean, it is not without its issues, of course. And it's just become the place that is home for us. I don't expect to be here forever. I mean, we've kind of told the kids, hey, when our youngest, which is our daughter, when your sister, we told the boys, like, when your sister goes off to college, like, don't expect to be coming home to this house all the time, because we are going to pack up. And I always tell them, and mom is going to live in a tiny house somewhere, probably in the mountains where it's cooler. Like, that is my, I don't think it's like a crazy dream. My husband's like, I don't know if I want to live in a tiny house with you. I'm like, well, that's my dream. That's what I want to do. So I want to live in a tiny house. If we have to put a second tiny house on the property for you, so be it. But that is kind of like, I don't expect to be here forever, or maybe I will be. I mean, at the end of the day, what I've realized about life is that you can plan all you want, but usually God has other plans and a different trajectory, and you'll just have to, you know, adapt to whatever happens.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So you said that your family was entrepreneurial. You sort of learned, although it was in restaurants, you learned the business, you understood business. So you then founded the Randall Research. So that was to do with presentations, to employee engagements, diversity, talent management. So what made you move from quite nonprofit sort of traditional sort of roles into setting up your own business?
Yeah. So, you know, through the early part of my career, you know, it was like within a nonprofit, but it was always like sales and marketing. And then eventually I moved into HR and I got really interested in generational diversity and employee engagement. And I got certified as an employee engagement specialist at one point. And then I had an opportunity to join a research company and kind of open up their generational diversity employee engagement arm to the company. And that was my first foray into being a business owner. I was a partner within a company. I was also like 4 weeks pregnant and didn't know it when I made that decision to make that shift. So, you know, I started working with that company. It was an awesome company. They did great work, but I was in partnership with a husband and wife. So you're always the third, right? You're always, it's the two thirds versus the third. And so about a year later, I decided to start my own company, and that would be Randall Research. It was an HR consulting firm. And ultimately that's what I did with corporations, is I would go in as a consultant and I would help with their generational diversity and their employee engagement. But the story behind that company would be, it wouldn't quite make it to the 5-year mark. And that business would actually go out of business. That business would fail just after making it 4 years. Even though I had big name clients like KPMG and BDO and Ally Bank, that business would not survive. And I learned a lot of lessons from having to go through a business failure. And from that business failure, I realized, okay, if I ever get a chance to start another business, here's some things I've got to do better. Here's some things I got to do smarter. And when that business failed, I had to go back to corporate America. I thought, I will never go back to corporate America, right? So I ended up back in corporate America working in the kind of an HR training kind of position, because that had been what my consulting firm was all about. And I just kept paying attention to what's my next thing, because I want to own my own business and I want to try it again and I want to see if I can be successful. And so while in corporate America, I got certified as a productivity and business coach. And I was like, okay, this is probably my plan B. This will be what I can exit with. And then I did. I started that second company, and it was really just, you know, more local-based productivity, business coaching, but it grew rapidly. And how it grew rapidly, of course, is the one thing I do now for folks. How my business grew rapidly was generating referrals that I never had to ask for. And when my clients started saying, hey, how are you generating these referrals that you're not having to ask for? I was forced to figure out my system and my process. I had to reverse engineer it and figure out what was working. And then that was the major pivot for where I am today. And I've been here, you know, just over 9 years. And from that perspective, as you kind of look at the trajectory, I realize now with the things that I do, like so much of my portfolio career of the things that I used to do serve me so well with running this business. But I credit being where I am today because I had to overcome a business failure and make the decision to pick myself up and try again.
Okay, so we'll get on to your current business regarding referrals. I just want to ask, why did Randall Research fail? What you said you had clients, and did you have employees? Did you have people like?
No, I didn't have any employees. I was a solopreneur. I really like that model. It's not a model I think that's sustainable for all businesses. And you really have to be good at having a team or an army of people that support your company. Yeah. But I definitely think that being a solopreneur is actually a great way to go if it works for you. So for me, it was more about realizing that I was hustling for every client I did land. I wasn't bringing in clients any other way other than networking. It was the main way that I was bringing in clients. I was trying other things. I was publishing articles and publications. I was on the speaker circuit, but I really brought in all of my clients by networking. It's either people who knew me that would end up having a need and would realize what I was doing. Maybe we sat on a board together or we were in an organization together, and then I would land the client. And that became a very exhausting way to grow a business if you're constantly pounding the pavement and networking. And I had 3 kids. Actually, when it was just back with the HR consulting firm, it was actually just 2 kids at the time. But it became a very exhausting way to really grow a business. And it was my only way, though. So I got on the roller coaster, that entrepreneurial roller coaster, where your highs and lows are severe in terms of the feast or famine of what's going on in your business. And so for me, it was that idea that I would get a client and I would put my head down and I would do the work for the next 2, 4, 6 months, however long the engagement was for. And then I would look up and be like, oh my gosh, there's no more clients. There's no more business. Now I got to go network again. And it was a cycle that continued and it was exhausting. And it's a normal cycle your first year in business, but I was still on it. I was still on that roller coaster 4 years in, and eventually the business just couldn't sustain itself and it wasn't working. And so I just knew it was time for me to call it a day, call it quits, and go back and get a job, unfortunately. And so, you know, when I think about the things that I learned from that business, it was your ability to fill the pipeline of new clients consistently. So that you always had like the pipeline full of people who could say yes. You were never like finishing work and then having to struggle to get the next client. It's also your ability to figure out how to scale. If you make the decision to stay a small business owner in terms of like a solopreneur and just be you, scalability regarding your efficiency and your processes and all that you do, those things become key for success. Because if not, you're just creating a really busy job for yourself. So the ability to scale was something that I noticed that I wasn't going to be able to do with that business because I was drowning. And you can't scale when you're drowning. Like I was already too far gone. But realizing that, wow, I'm going to have to keep doing all the work if I can't scale. And there's lots of ways to scale, but you have to scale in a specific way if you're choosing not to bring on employees. And so it's understanding what that looks like. So, you know, understanding how to consistently fill that prospecting pipeline, figuring out how to scale in a way that allowed me to maintain the business structure and setup that I wanted, and to give me as much freedom and balance as I wanted as well. I mean, I know balance is like it's not really a thing, right? But the ability to know that if I want to shut down at 3 o'clock because I want to get my kids from school, I can do that. And if I want to, you know, how I want to structure my day and how I want to make myself available to also be a fully involved parent and wife, that was really important to me. And so it was all those lessons that I learned that I took with me when I started my coaching practice, and then eventually evolved that into what the business is today.
So I think you're incredibly brave to wind up a business. As you said, you kind of had clients. The sales pipeline is such an important thing, when it's something that I haven't been completely aware of, but I'm learning very fast how important it is to have that continuity to go from one client to the next and move through that cycle. So I totally agree. What was it like your first day back in corporate America after running your business for 4 years?
Is awful. And I hate to say it like that, because the president of the company that I worked for, the executive leadership team that I served on, they were all great people. Like they were great people. And I had to put on a suit. I had to wear heels. It was just It was all around awful. Actually, when I left corporate America and I started my coaching practice, I actually took all my suits to Goodwill. And I was like, nope, I'm going to, you hear that story about burn the ships, right? So there is no retreat. You cannot go back. I was like, yeah. I'm going to get rid of all my suits. I kept one, unfortunately, for funerals, but I was like, get rid of all my suits. So I never, never, never can go back to corporate America. That was the goal. I was like, I'm going to burn the ships. Effectively, I burned my suits by donating them. But it was, I would drive to work and I would get to work and my heels clicking on the marble as I walked across the lobby in the morning would like jolt me into reality. And sometimes I would be like, how did I get here? Mm-hmm. Like I would not remember my morning commute. I would be so zoned out. And then sometimes, I mean, so I'm a rule follower by nature, but I do have this rebellious streak when I feel like the rules are ridiculous and, or I'm trying to buck against something that I don't have full guts to buck up against, but I'll pick small ways to rebel. And so I used to stop every day and get a Starbucks because it would make me late to work by at least a couple of minutes. Like it was just my way of controlling. That sounds so pathetic and I would never want my children to hear that.
Like it's really not pathetic because I talk to people that I coach that small wins are really important and you should not celebrate them as well. And I know going to Starbucks and being late isn't a small win, but it's a rebellious streak and it's just saying to them, look, I'm different. And I think as an entrepreneur, a solopreneur, you have to be different and in corporate America can be incredible. I worked 15 years in the big four consulting. So I know conformity very, very well. So I get that. And I also get, I started my journey fully as an entrepreneur only October last year.
Oh.
So I had a couple of businesses before while I was still working, but I've sort of wrapped it around and created a business. And the thought of me going back to corporate is painful. Terrible.
It is.
So I think you're incredibly brave to close a business that wasn't working. I think you're incredibly brave to go back to corporate America. But equally, you still had the strength and knew what you wanted to do, that you wanted to be entrepreneurial. So big kudos to you and well done. So let's move on to where you are with your business now. Stacey Brown Randall, it's all about creating referrals without asking for them, which I think I'm going to learn lots from this today. I really am, because I'm in the networking phase. I'm doing it, and virtually it's a lot easier than literally traveling in and out to different places, but I'm in that networking phase. So I'm fascinated how you've created this program to be able to get referrals without asking.
Yeah, so here's the thing. I didn't wake up one day with a stroke of brilliance and God was like, hey, Stacey, you're now going to go teach people how to get referrals without asking. I really did learn this from the School of Hard Knocks. And I think that's actually helped me refine it over time and help so many other small business owners with it. But when I started my second business, my productivity and coaching practice, I had a really like hard conversation with myself about, okay, you have had a business fail. You know what it looks like and you know what you need to do different. So are you going to do it? Which means I was looking at where my clients and my consulting firm came from. Like, how did I land KPMG? How did I land BDO? How did I land Ally Bank? So I like went back and I was paying attention to how I landed those businesses. And that's when it hit me. Oh my God, they all came from networking, right? Oh my goodness. I can't believe they all came from showing up at networking events of people that I knew in my network. And so I started saying, well, there's lots of other ways to grow a business. I didn't have a budget. So like advertising and all that kind of stuff was out. I know that people can grow a business by using social media, but it is a long-term strategy and you really have to be engaged on it or have like the right setup for it. And so for me, I was like, well, referrals, like that's the holy grail of how to bring in clients. And so I was like, I want to get some of those. Like that would be great. And then I started doing what everybody else does. And I went to like the all-knowing Google and I was like, hey, Google, tell me how to get referrals. And every piece of advice was like, well, just go ask for them. Here's who to ask, when to ask, how to ask, how often to ask, never stop asking, always be asking. And I was like, oh no, like none of that worked for who I was. None of that was the reputation I wanted in the marketplace. I didn't want to show up at a networking event and people like scatter because here comes Stacey and all she's going to do is ask you for a referral. Like it just, nothing about it fit me. And here's when I knew I was onto something. When I paid attention to all the advice about asking for referrals and all of our reactions to it is like, oh, that's awkward. That's uncomfortable. I feel desperate. And then the advice from those experts was, well, just get over yourself. And I was like, you're basically telling the majority of humans on this planet to get over themselves and to push through their uncomfortableness and get uncomfortable and be okay with asking, even if they hate it. I was like, there has to be a better way. If the advice is do this, and 99% of us, I just made that statistic up, but if they're like, hey, ask for referrals, and the majority of us are like, no, gosh, please don't make me, that sounds awful. I knew in that moment, if all the advice was get over yourself, you have to ask anyway. I was like, there's gotta be a better way. So I started paying attention to the human dynamic and psychology behind how referrals worked. Because when I started my second business, I was like, business failure is not an option. Like, we have got to figure this piece out. Going back to corporate America a second time after freedom is not going to happen to me again. Yeah. And so I was like, we got to figure this piece out. So I just started guinea pigging on my coaching practice and trying to figure out how to get referrals. And it ended up in my first year, when I was running my coaching practice, I generated 112 referrals, none of which that I asked for. When I then reverse engineered, okay, well, where did all those come from? I started to notice patterns, and I started to notice things that I had been doing and how they were triggering referrals to happen, and how I was really ultimately big picture, like 30,000 foot view, I was focusing on relationships, and I was really building on relationships, and how that was then leading me to say different things to be able to generate referrals. And so when I realized that, then I started putting it into practice. And because I was a business coach, I was coaching a lot of small business owners, and they would be like, hey, Stacy, your coaching practice is growing. Like, you're raising your rates. It's hard to get on your schedule. If I don't click in for my 1 year strategy, I mean, my 1 year coaching package with you now, I may have to be on the waiting list for the next 6 months. They're like, what's going on? I'm like, well, I have a lot of demand and I'm getting all these referrals. And it was really funny because a lot of them were like, so thanks for all your productivity tips. We loved you teaching us how to tame our inbox, but we'd rather learn how you're generating referrals without asking. And then teaching it to those first couple of clients forced me to put it into a process to realize, oh, there's steps to what I do. And there's specific moments that I thought I just naturally knew to do that I figured out, oh, no, wait, anybody can do that. This isn't based on me or my personality or even the business I'm in. I mean, the first two people I taught this to, one was a financial advisor and the other was an attorney. And so when I look back at all of the clients that I've been able to help since then, it's really refined this down to a process. And I used to do it one-on-one. Like, I would teach this process in a one-on-one coach. I kind of moved away from the productivity and the business coaching and really honed in on the referral strategy. And I would teach this one-to-one. And then eventually I would teach it to workshops, like 30 to 50 business owners in the room. And I would be teaching it that way. But you remember the one thing I said about one of the things I knew I learned from my first business failure. Mm-hmm. I say first business failure like I'm going to have a second one. I didn't mean to say it like that. But like from that business failure, one of the things I learned is keep your eye on scalability. Mm-hmm. Because if you want to stay a small business owner, like tiny, micro, small, like solopreneur, me, myself, and I, if mm-hmm. you want to stay like that, you don't have enough hours to sell as a coach, right? Like, so pay attention to your scalability factor. Well, when I realized what I was teaching could be taught one-to-one or in a group setting, I also then knew this could be taught online and I could create a program that's available online. And so that was the next phase for me, was to take this program and to figure out, okay, how do I get the curriculum and the teachings online? How do I give the templates and the checklists and the samples and the examples and everything people need to be able to go through this without having to talk to me, you know, a couple hours every month as part of a coaching practice? And so the scalability factor was like a home run for me, because I realized, oh, as much as I think this is like me telling you what to do, it's not me having to talk to you to do it. Mm-hmm. You could watch some videos to get it. Mm-hmm. And then we launched the beta of the online course and then went fully into the online program. This was back in 2016. And then I remembered, like, the online program would only sell to people I knew, right? Now, they may not have been in North Carolina, but they were just people I knew. And I remember it was after the program had been available for many months. I remember it selling to the first person I didn't know. And I think it was like a real estate agent in like Denver, Colorado. And I'd be like, oh my gosh, now strangers are buying it. Now strangers are seeing the value in it and they're buying it. And then I remember when we sold to our first person outside the United States, I think it was in Canada. And I was like, oh my gosh, now I'm international, right? And now we're in 10 countries. Right. Like, last year during COVID, we brought on Costa Rica and the Bahamas, but we're in Singapore, we're in the UK, we're obviously in Canada, the United States, but we're in New Zealand, we're in Australia. Like, now I realize, wow, I'm helping business owners all over the world. And it's the same strategy, but how I teach it allows you to customize it for your business and your personality and what you're comfortable doing. Because ultimately, that's what this comes down to, is you have to take care of these people who are going to refer you, which we call referral sources. And so how you do that better fit for you, so you'll be willing to do the work.
Okay, so we'll talk a little bit more about your online program, because I think it's fascinating moving from that one-to-one to one-to-many, then to an online. I think it's an interesting sort of case study for us to talk about. But there was a quote on your website, which I think is the golden nugget for my listeners. And correct me if this is wrong. You say referrals only come from relationships. Relationships come from connections, and connections we build through ongoing touch points. Is it so the relationships make sense, and building relationships, but I think the key point is through ongoing touch points. Just expand on that point.
Yeah, so that's actually the philosophy. That is the underlying philosophy behind how referrals without asking works. Everything's built on that. And I tell folks, it's like, that's the philosophy. If you decide you want to learn from me, that's the philosophy you got to buy into. And every person who teaches another person how to do something, we all have a philosophy. And from our philosophy comes the tactics and the methodology and the other information that we're going to teach to you. So that's the foundational point of what I teach. Referrals only come from relationships. Okay, so if you believe that, which if you looked at the psychology and human dynamic of when referrals happen, it's completely true. If referrals only come from relationships, then our focus is on maintaining those relationships. Right. And the way that I teach to do that is different from a lot of people, because what we want to do is we want to maintain connection. We want to be connected to the relationships. And those relationships are people who can refer us. It's not everybody you know. Not everybody you know can refer you, but it's paying attention to who can refer you. And then realizing what you need to do to maintain connections. But here's the thing. We look at those connection points through ongoing touch points, because that is something a busy business owner can actually schedule and make happen.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, this has got to become a process, and it's got to be part of your workflow, or you're not going to do it. Because as a business owner, we're crazy busy. Even if we try not to be, we're somehow crazy busy when we're balancing business and life. Yeah. And so those ongoing touch points is like a foundational part of what we teach in my program, Growth by Referrals, because it's how you're going to maintain connection. But there's a framework behind how those touch points are built, and what they look like for your business looks different from how they look like for my business. But there's some commonalities they all have together. And so those touch points, and this is what I always tell folks, if you're thinking about this at a high level, your ability to stay connected to your referral sources, and not just connected, but impacting how they feel about you. And how I want a referral source to feel about you, Mark, is I want them to know you care. I want them to know that Mark doesn't take the referrals I send him for granted. He appreciates me. Like, that's ultimately what we're after when it comes down to taking care of our referral sources. So how we do that with those touch points, it's not your e-newsletter that you send out every month. In fact, I'm probably not opening it, and I really don't care. And e-newsletters are great, but they're part of your marketing plan. They're not a part of your referral plan. Right? And I don't need to have coffee with you every single month and talk about your business and how things are going for you, right? Because that's not maintaining connection with me. And that I don't need to do the same thing every month. So our touch points, they have to be memorable and meaningful. They need some variety. You can't just mail a postcard every month and be like, I'm going to get me some referrals from this postcard I send every single month, right? Like, so there's variety behind them. They're memorable and meaningful. They're not done too much, so they don't become routine and expected, but they're done just enough so there's a surprise and delight factor behind them. There's the, I didn't expect that. So everything that we build with these touch points builds it in a way that comes from a genuine place of, I care about you, and I want you to know how much I appreciate your referrals, and I'm going to take care of you in this way. And it also gives me an opportunity to plant some very, very important language, which are what we call referral seeds, so that subconsciously you're even thinking about me from a referral perspective while feeling like I care about you, because I do. And one of the most important things I tell folks when they come into my program is, if you're using this to manipulate someone, or you're using this because technically you're really dead inside and you don't care about people, everyone can see through that. And it's not going to work. My program works best for the person who is like, I am so grateful these people refer me and I want to make sure they know it. And then I would also like to keep the referrals coming. And then it's also for the people who are like, hey, I need more people referring me. So like, how do I cultivate the right type of relationship, a respectful relationship with somebody who has the potential to send clients to me and refer me? So it's about learning both.
Sorry, it's got to be the right person though to yes. have the network to refer you, doesn't it? Yes. So I get the tactic of a sort of variety of different ways of being able to touch points with people. I get that, but you could be networking or looking for people that are complete isolated solopreneurs, and they're not going to be able to provide you with referrals. How do you decipher who the right people are? And is it a calculated thought process on who the right people are to speak to?
Absolutely. Lots of people participate in what I call spray and pray. Like you just network with a whole bunch of people and pray somebody wants to do business with you, right? Like, and people use that same tactic when they try to figure out how to get referrals, and it's not the right way. Everything that I teach, actually, how you take someone who's never referred you and turn them into a referral source, or how you take someone who has referred you and get more referrals from them, everything I teach starts with the same step, and that's identification. And how you identify who your referral sources are or who they should be all comes down to understanding the two main things you have to have for someone to refer you: desire and opportunity. So you've got to be the real estate agent I want to refer. You've got to be the business coach I want to refer. I mean, you're a dime a dozen, right? So you got to be the one for me. So that desire has to be there, meaning we have a relationship and I trust you and I'm willing to refer you. But it doesn't actually matter if I don't actually know any small business owners that I can refer to you for coaching, right? So we have to think about it from the perspective of who then has opportunity. So the easiest thing to do, and it's where I tell everybody to start, I kind of call it layer number one. If there's six layers to a referral strategy, I look at layer number one as, are you getting referrals now? And if you're getting referrals now, the first identification we're going to do is who's referring you. Who are your referral sources? Now, you started in October, right? So I wouldn't have this huge expectation that you've got dozens and dozens of referral sources. But if you have any, we need to first identify who they are. Now, if you have a couple of dozen referral sources, I'm going to say stop. Don't worry about anything else. Start there. Let's figure out how to create those touch points, that referral plan that's going to take care of those folks so that they will continue to give you more referrals. And so that's really layer number one, is identifying your existing referral sources and then taking care of them in a very specific way to get more referrals while you're taking care of them. But then layer number two is, hey, you need referral sources. It starts with identification. Who are the right people to be referring you? And there may be four different types of referral sources. The point is you only want to focus on the top two, which are clients and centers of influence, because they are more likely to have desire and opportunity to refer you. Family and friends are great, but I really don't expect a whole bunch of referrals to come from them. They have desire, but not always opportunity, depending on what they do. Mm-hmm. So when we look at our clients that could refer us, and that's easy because they're clients, right? But then we look at our centers of influence. To your point, we have to get very specific as to who's the right center of influence or who's the right types of centers of influence to become referral sources.
That's really, really interesting. Do you have a sales and marketing strategy beyond your referral methodology?
Yeah. So the way that I think about my sales strategy for my own business and the way that I teach it for everybody else is it's three parts, right? So you should have what you do on the prospecting side. You should have what you do on the marketing side, and you should have what you do for referrals. But those are three distinct plans. And over time, as your business grows, you have to start paying attention to where your clients come from. I've done lots of things. I've done networking, right? I've done joining those associations and groups that have all those networking events. I have going to just the random one-off networking events. I've done the 7 million cups of coffee. I've spent money on ads, right? I've tried direct mail pieces. Like I've tried, and this is between like my first business that failed and obviously this business that I have now. I've tried a lot of different tactics, like being a speaker and speaking at conferences and getting speaking engagements. Like I've tried a lot of different things. But when I pay attention, and this is something every business owner should do from the start of their business, is track where your clients and prospects come from. Right. So when you get a prospect, before they become a client, when they give you a yes, no, or not now to working with you, track where they came from. It's called the source. Because when you track where your clients are coming from, then you can figure out which sources are working. Right. Now, of course, if you're in my Growth by Referrals program, I want referrals to be the biggest piece of the pie of where your clients are going to come from. But it would be silly for me to think it's going to be the only place where your referrals, I mean, where your clients are going to come from is referrals. I know you're going to have other things that you're doing within your business that are more, you know, marketing and prospecting in nature to generate new clients. But I want you to know which ones are working. So for me, I know that there are really, for a long time, there were three, and now there's four ways of where my clients find me. Of course, referrals tops my list, but also when I'm a guest, just like I am today on somebody else's podcast, that's going to, you know, introduce me to a whole bunch more of listeners who are listening to this episode and decide, hey, I want to learn more from Stacey, right? So it's guesting on other people's podcasts. Obviously, I do a lot of speaking, not as much in person anymore now. Of course, I haven't done anything in about a year, but I did a lot of virtual speaking before to begin with. So, you know, speaking engagements also works, but I published a book a couple of years ago and I'm working on my second one now. And so having a book also helps me with people just finding me through Amazon, because once you have so many sales and so many reviews and recommendations within the Amazon platform or any of the book platforms, they start to push your book up. They start to, you know, mention you, and they start to like say, hey, you may be also interested in. And so people find my book, and then they find my book, they read about how I teach, and then they're interested in learning more about me. But you know, when I look at it from that perspective, there are 1,000 other things I could be doing to grow my business, but those are the things that work for me. And so that's what I use. Do I have a social media presence? Yes. And do I post on social media? Yes. Do I have any big expectations? Is it going to bring me a whole bunch of clients? No. But I do know if you read my book on Amazon, then you connect with me on LinkedIn, and then you download something, some kind of content piece that I have for you that's for free on my website. I know that you're moving yourself through the process of figuring out, do I want to learn from Stacey? So having those other mechanisms in place is important. I know I get to cut out all that when you're referred to me, but not everybody comes to me is actually referred. So of course I have other sales and marketing strategies in place too.
So just, it would be interesting just to get some sort of, it doesn't have to be exact numbers, it could just be percentages, but how much of your business for this business is social media? How much is your website? How much is your books versus referrals? And now you've got a developed business. So how do you break them down in sort of percentages, rough percentages?
Oh, you know, it's interesting. I actually have my assistant working right now. We had a little loss of data in the business when I realized when I was in between virtual assistants that where people were coming from wasn't being captured. And so I realized, I was like, oh my gosh, we have a huge gap of data that's missing. And so I'm the type of person who I'll just go back and ask you like, hey, by the way, how'd you hear about me? And if someone's like, hey, I thought I already answered this, I'm like, yep, we lost the data and now we're having to recreate it. So we've actually been in that process for a while now, trying to recreate the data. And so I don't actually know. I usually know. And I think any percentages I would say would probably be old. I would say it can fluctuate anywhere between 30% to 50% are going to be folks that are referred to me. And then I would probably say about 20% to 30% will probably hear me on a podcast. Nice. And then the rest is kind of made up of people who maybe have heard me speak or they've found my book. But I think that in any given moment that can fluctuate. So if I have a whole bunch of podcast episodes that I've been a guest on go live in 1 month, well, that's going to tip the numbers to where people are coming from. Yeah. If I get on stage and do it, or even do it virtually, a speaking engagement, and I do a whole bunch in a couple of weeks, that's going to tip the stage where people hear about me and come into my world. So it just kind of depends. The constant that I can count on, though, is the referral piece. I don't need to be on stage or be on a bunch of podcasts for that piece to work. I need to work my own referral plan, which, of course, I do. Yeah. This is not one of those things where the cobbler doesn't have any shoes. Yeah. I work my referral plan so that I can continue to get referrals from my referral sources.
And do you think now networking and networking groups, do you think that's artificial
No. No, you know, it's interesting. I always tell folks, I think it's a great place to start, particularly if you have a local business and you want to have clients that are more local or regional. Doing that local networking, I think, is really smart. I think having a strategy behind your networking makes more sense. And that's something we've talked about on my podcast as well, is that if you're going to do the networking, let's make it smart networking, not just networking for the sake of networking. So that means having a plan. Like if you're going to join a group, right? If you're going to join a chamber of commerce or a BNI group, or you're going to join some other group, right? National Association of Women Business Owners. If you're going to join a chapter locally, have a plan, right? Get involved. That's when you actually get to know people and then actually business will start happening. Like, have a plan behind your networking. It's also a great place when you need more referral sources and you don't have a lot of clients. You can start paying attention to who's best to refer you and then go find the groups where those people are. And then put aside the fact that you want referrals from them and build a relationship with them first and help them. And then eventually, right, when you're following my process, there's a way to weave it in from a language perspective from referrals where you're still never asking and you're continuing to build relationships. So I do think networking is valuable. I think that when you have a national or an international business like I do, what networking looks like is entirely different and it doesn't happen nearly as much as it used to. When people ask me to go to local events all the time and I'm like, yeah, no, I'm going to go to my kid's baseball game because I just don't need to, right? And so it's getting clear about what works for you as well. But I wholeheartedly believe in networking. I know when I was starting out as a HR consultant and then as the productivity and coaching business coaching person, I know that so much of my business came from my network. And then I was able to get referrals from them. And then from there, my business kind of changed. So I do believe in networking. I just think you got to be smart about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so what's the plan? What's the 5-year plan? What's your future hold for Stacey?
Yeah, right now it's more the same. And I'm actually really excited to be able to say that. I feel like for a number of years, we have been in building mode. And we have been, like, we've overhauled the program a couple of times. And I'm really, really happy with the way the program is set now and being able to actually encourage you to continue to finish the program and how we do gamification behind the scenes within our technology platform. It's really helping more and more people be able to generate referrals without asking and really just leaning into where we are right now, fixing the things that aren't working, but also continuing to keep the business going. We have a number of signature programs. It's not just growth by referrals. We also have Sticky Client Experience and Goal Finishers Club, kind of like our three main programs. We have things that support those as well. Other things like our Referral Ninja Inner Circle, things that we do to support people. And so from that perspective, I see the next 5 years more of the same. My youngest is starting middle school in the fall. She'll be a sixth grader. My boys will be in eighth grade. And so I would tell you, if you're asking me what happens when they're out of school, everything changes then. But for the next 5 years, we are really just focusing on helping as many small business owners as we can in the ways that I'm uniquely prepared to help people. I will publish a second book. I'll probably have a third book out before that 5-year mark is up. That's part of the plan as well. But really more of the same.
Just conscious of time, but online programs. So I read somewhere that only something like 25% of people that do pure online programs actually complete the whole program. Is that your case? Is that your experience?
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad you asked that question because we have not in the past done a really good job of paying attention to that. And so we decided this year, like, that's one thing we want to fix. And so we just kind of started digging in and paying attention to who's starting the program and who's not finished it. And I would say my statistic is much higher. It's somewhere over 50% that start and finish. But still, that other, whatever that percentage is of folks who, like, buy the program and then don't start it, I'm like, oh, no, no. Our goal is to close that gap and to make it easy for them. So we have some bonuses that we do. We are doing one right now. It's called the GBR Bootcamp. It's where I actually am with you for 7 weeks, basically making you get through the program. Because why are you going to invest in something and then not take advantage of it? Because I know when people go through my program, they have success, right? That's when they get the ROI on the investment in my program. And so I don't have firm statistics on that right now because we just started paying attention to, okay, wait, what is our purchase versus non-finish rate versus those who finish. But it is very true. And you know what? I am guilty of so many different online courses that I have purchased that I've not even opened up and started. Like, it's a thing. It's a real thing.
It's a curse, especially for entrepreneurs, because you get bombarded with so much and everything looks like the shiny penny that you should be doing.
Yeah, I got it. FOMO, right? I can't miss out on this. Oh my gosh, Stacey's got this bonus. We got to get it, right? And all those things are real, right? And I am as guilty of them as other people are in terms of buying things and not finishing things. But we do think, because I've been through so many online courses, we do things different in ours. Like, for instance, you actually upload your work, and there's a six, it's a six module course, but in module 2, 3, and 6, you upload your work and then I personally approve it. So you can't move to the, you can move to the next module, but you can't earn your next referral ninja badge, and you can't earn your next belt color, because we use our referral ninja piece through everything. Like, you can't earn that next level until you've completed the work and I've approved it. And that way, when people are like, oh, I'm getting feedback from Stacy, and it's one thing my team, like, I do have folks that that work with me, like virtual assistant and others, they're just not employees. And they're like, you know, you should probably hand that off. I'm like, oh no, people are coming into this program because they want my opinion and I'm going to give it to them. And you can go do my bookkeeping. So from that perspective, like, you upload your work and then I review it and then you hear from me and that helps you move forward. We've got gamification where you earn badges and belt colors for your ninja as you go through it. We mail you things in the mail, like in the mailbox, not the inbox, the mailbox, as you hit different levels within the program. And then once you've got your plan in place and you're executing, every 3 months we remind you to upload your results so we can see how things are going along with you. So that's a big, and of course we have the Facebook group, where people are able to engage with other folks and have community in addition to have access to me. But that is a big way of how we try to do things different within the program.
Awesome. Okay, we're coming to the end of the interview. I asked the same 6 questions to all of my guests. They're quick fire questions. They don't need a quick fire answer. Number one is, what's the best decision that you made?
Starting my second business.
Best piece of advice?
The same question I ask my daughter pretty often is, were you brave today?
Oh, good. That's a good question. A good statement. Who helped you most in your career?
Oh, so many humans. But I guess I would have to say God.
Okay. Do you have any regrets?
Sometimes when I get to a level of success, I look back and I'm like, what was I so scared of? I could have been here sooner. Like, why didn't I just do the thing that I hemmed and hawed about forever?
What are you most proud of?
For Mother's Day at school, my daughter made a Mother's Day gift for me, and it went through all the things she loves about her mom. And there were wonderful things, right? And she's very generous and all the things about me. But there was one page that says, my mom is a good businesswoman. And that was really, really special for me to hear her recognize that at 10 years old and to be able to share that back with me.
That's amazing. What does legacy mean to you?
You know, legacy actually doesn't have anything to do with business for me. I want to help people. I want to impact people. I want to make people's lives better. I want to keep them from business failure if I can. But legacy for me is all about the 3 beautiful little humans that my husband and I are raising and making sure that we raise them right so that they can do and be what they're supposed to as they go out into the world. So for me, it's not about a business legacy. It's not about a financial success metric that we hit, but it's about having a family that we're proud of.
That's amazing. And where can people find you?
Homebase is stacybrownrandall.com. And the one thing I would direct people to is actually the Referral Ninja Quiz, which you can find on that homepage, where you can go take a quiz. It's 9 questions, and it'll tell you what Referral Ninja level you are, and it'll show you how you move yourself up to the top level, which is a Referral Ninja Master. But it's the Referral Ninja Quiz. You can find it at stacybrownrandall.com.
That's wonderful. Okay, Stacy, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Thanks a lot.